Good morning, everyone. We are in a series about King David in the Hebrew Bible, and I love these stories because not only is he one of the greatest kings that the Israelite people knew, so we get to hear about his exploits, but you also get to hear a lot about how really human he was. And even though he was considered a great king, man, he had a lot of mistakes. And I appreciate that because, man, do I make a lot of mistakes. But today, we're actually going to talk about one of his greatest victories, which is a story I'm assuming all of you have heard about. Even if you're not a Bible nerd, you've probably heard the story of David and Goliath. Is that true? Is there anyone in here that's never heard that story in one form or another? And it's because it's such an amazing story. It may be one of the best stories that is known across the world, regardless of religions. It's a story of a plucky young guy going up against a giant soldier, and the odds are stacked against him. And yet he comes out victorious because he comes in bringing something unusual, something that no one was expecting. It's a great story of being the underdog, and I think it's something we all long to be. Maybe this is why it's so popular, is because we all want to be that underdog that has that victory. We all have these problems in our lives that we think, man, it'd be so great if I could just walk in there and knock them out. But I may disappoint you today, because my sermon is not going to be how to slay your giants. That is the normal sermon that generally comes out of this kind of a story. And if you really need to hear that kind of a sermon, there are thousands of them online. And they go something like this. God has given you dreams, or God has given you a vision, or God has given you a calling. But there's giant obstacles in the way, and you can remove them with his help. You can overcome them with God's help. And it's so clickable. It's so amazing because that's exactly what we want. I want to be able to remove the obstacles in my way. I want to think outside the box or find the right tool to get these things out of my life. I understand why that kind of a sermon is so popular. I mean, frankly, we call these things life hacks today. Anybody watched a life hack video? No, come on. I know almost every single one of you has watched a life hack video because it's a billion-dollar industry out there, where it's like a 30-second video that shows you how to solve problems you never knew even existed. It'll be something like, if you watch this video and you have a can that has a tab on it and you go get a spoon and then you insert the spoon under the tab a certain way, it's going to be able to open it. And there are people out there, there's now channels making fun of the life hack videos that are saying, well, by the time you watched that video and went and found a spoon, you could have just opened it with your finger anyway, like it was meant to be. Right, but we love life hacks. We love shortcuts. In fact, the author Malcolm Gladwell got into this about 15 years ago with this story. And I'm a fan of Malcolm Gladwell in general. He comes at things with a little bit of a contrarian viewpoint, which I think is kind of fun. And I don't always agree with everything he has to say. But about 15 years ago, he actually did this TED Talk and then wrote a book on the David and Goliath story. And what he had to say wasn't really original to him. He just put it together in his typical Gladwell style, which is very readable and kind of fun. And his basic points were this, is that maybe when you're reading through the story, you notice some oddities about Goliath, the giant. Maybe this really big guy had a disease called giantism. And if you have this disease, you can't see very well. And really, he's almost like a big teddy bear kind of stumbling around. And maybe he's not as imposing as you really think he was. And then in comes this young guy who rewrites the rules of warfare, where Goliath has this sword and shield. David comes in and he does something unusual and out of the box, and he comes in with a sling, which is actually an extremely dangerous weapon. And he comes the victor. And maybe if you put all that together, David wasn't really an underdog to begin with. And you don't have to be an underdog in your own life or in your own business or whatever it has to be if you just approach things the right way. And I think that's a lot of well-meaning intention, and I see that all over the place. But unfortunately, I think if you actually read the story, that's not at all what is going on. For instance, Goliath, who is this giant, comes from the Philistines, who are the major military power in this region. Usually, if you're going to bluff, if you're going to stick a big guy out there and throw some armor on him and hope he bluffs, you're bluffing because you have the weaker hand. Do you understand what I'm saying? You don't bluff if you have the stronger hand. So it doesn't make any sense that this strong military power would throw out someone who really isn't all that great at fighting to begin with, or spend so much money on armor that would only fit this guy. They knew how to fight. And the Israelite people on the other side were seasoned warriors. They had been through many battles. They had fought one-on-one. I think after 40 days of watching this guy, they would have figured out if he was any good. So that doesn't really make any sense to me. I think he was an imposing warrior. And this idea, and I think this is where we really get it wrong, is that this sling is just something out of the box and out of the ordinary, isn't necessarily true either. We know from archaeologists that there's artwork from the Middle Eastern period, and all the armies used soldiers with slings. They understood that it was a really good ranged weapon. It was cheap. You just needed some leather and some rocks. They used them all the time. And in fact, we learned earlier, when Israel was going through a civil war, that the tribe of Benjamin found 700 soldiers that could be trained to use a sling with their left hand so they could still be fighting with their right hand. Any idea what tribe King Saul came from? That very same tribe. Chances are he knew that you could use a sling in battle. So the idea of David walking up and going, "What are you guys doing? I have a sling. This is going to be amazing." There's probably 1,000 soldiers that are going, "Yeah, I got one too." And they're probably just as good as David at this. Those aren't the answer to the story. And in fact, you might not like me saying this. I'm getting as unclickable as I can here. Is that this story really isn't even about you and your problems. But I think when we come to it looking for shortcuts, is that can get us into trouble. And honestly, shortcuts aren't always all they're cracked up to be. When I was younger, I loved shortcuts. I loved trying to be efficient and taking off time, and I was buzzing everywhere. I got a son who just became a police officer, so I'm pretending he didn't hear this, but I was speeding all the time trying to cut off time. And for a little while, my family lived in Pittsburgh, and I got a job here in D.C. So for about a year, I was here during the week, and I was driving back to Pittsburgh on the weekends. And there's one night in the winter, and I would try to avoid 270 because I was going home after rush hour and it was miserable. So I would cut through. I would take a shortcut through West Virginia on these little roads. And it was winter. It was getting dark early. And I noticed I was getting really, really low on gas. So I started fumbling with my phone to try to find a gas station. And my phone turned off. And I remember my thought in that moment when my phone shut down was, I'm going to die. I mean, I've seen this movie. There's only a couple of options that can happen, right? I can get out of my car and I can start wandering around. And that's when I get mauled by some wild animal in West Virginia, or I end up on someone's property who has more guns than they have forks and knives, right? Or I just wait in my car without a phone all night long, and this is when the serial killer shows up. We know how this goes, right? But I did happen to, I was on vapors and coasted into this little gas station on this back road, and there's one pump out of the four that worked, and the whole thing was dark. And I know there is one out of the four worked because I tried the other ones. And then I went through and I just drove straight till I hit civilization again. And I did end up making it out, obviously. Didn't finish the movie in the way it normally would. But shortcuts aren't always what we need, right? It's not about finding the right tool or saying the right prayer or believing the right things, or even giving the right amount of money. Those shortcuts aren't going to help you. I want to call this shortcut theology, is that when we bring our baggage to these texts, sometimes all we're doing is we're reading them, trying to find solutions to our problems. And in this one, I'm sorry to say, it's not there. It's not necessarily the story and the meaning you want to hear, but maybe it's the story you need to hear. Are you with me? All right, you ready to read it? Let's go. We're going to be in 1 Samuel 17, and we're going to read through most of the chapter. Are you guys good with that? We're going to read the Bible. Let's go. Starting in verse 1, the Philistines gathered their forces for war at Thorny Hedge, and I'm telling you the literal meaning of these places. For war at Thorny Hedge in Judah, so they're in the Israelite territory, and camped between Thorny Hedge and tilled land at the edge of bloodshed. And now, if you're not sure if the Philistines are the enemy, it just kind of told you that. Saul and the men of Israel gathered and camped in the valley of Elah. Then they lined up in battle formation to face the Philistines. The Philistines were standing on one hill, and the Israelites were standing on another hill with a ravine between them. Now, if you're a student of warfare or read enough books or something, you kind of know, maybe it's you watch that Star Wars movie where if you get the high ground, you have the advantage, right? And so if both of them are standing on high ground, neither enemy army wants to go up and try to go uphill to fight the other one. So they're at a standstill at this point. Then a champion named Goliath from Gath came out of the Philistine camp. He was 9 feet 9 inches tall. Not quite sure on this one, but we're going to go with this. And wore a bronze helmet and bronze scale armor that weighed 125 pounds. There was bronze armor on his shins and a bronze javelin that was slung between his shoulders. His spear shaft was like a weaver's beam, and the iron point of his spear weighed 15 pounds. In addition, a shield bearer was walking in front of him. Now, they go to a lot of detail talking about how well protected he was, how big and fierce he was. And also, I want you to notice it talks about the shield bearer a couple times. What is a shield bearer supposed to do? He bears a shield, right? And it's a really big shield. And that really big shield is specifically for ranged weapons. All right? He stood and shouted to the Israelite battle formations, "Why do you come out to line up in battle formation?" he asked them. "Am I not a Philistine? And are you not servants of Saul? Choose one of your men and have him come down against me. If he wins in a fight against me and kills me, we will be your servants. But if I win against him and kill him, then you will be our servants and serve us. Then the Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel today. Send me a man so we can fight each other. When Saul and all Israel heard these words from the Philistine, they lost their courage and were terrified. Now, I really like this taunt from Goliath. He's basically saying, I am a great man from my nation, and you are, well, you're just a bunch of tools of this coward King Saul who's afraid to come out and face me. Now, interestingly, this is exactly what King Saul is supposed to do. Earlier in chapter 8, we learned that the people wanted a king specifically to lead them in battle. And then in the next chapter, we learned Saul was picked specifically to fight against the Philistines. This was his moment. And yet he's hiding in a tent. Let's continue. Now, David, I'm going to skip this part. This is a part that's kind of interesting. He talks about he was a shepherd and he has other brothers and they were fighting. And his dad sends him over with some food. And I love this part. His dad's very politically smart because he says, I'm going to give the soldiers the normal food, but man, I'm going to give their commanders the good stuff, right? And so it talks about that. And then David's coming along and David's sent to give them the food. So it says, David got up early in the morning, verse 20, left the flock with someone to keep it, loaded up, and set out as Jesse had charged him. He arrived at the perimeter of the camp as the army was marching out to its battle formation, shouting their battle cry. Israel and the Philistines lined up in battle formation, facing each other. David left his supplies in the care of the quartermaster and ran to the battle line. When he arrived, he asked his brothers how they were. While he was speaking with them, suddenly the champion named Goliath, the Philistine from Gath, came forward from the Philistine battle line and shouted his usual words, which David heard. When all the Israelite men saw Goliath, they retreated from him, terrified. Previously, an Israelite man had declared, "Do you see this man who keeps coming out? He comes to defy Israel. The king will make the man who kills him very rich, and will give him his daughter. The king will also make the family of that man's father exempt from paying taxes in Israel." Now, I love this, is that Goliath, basically in his taunt, is stripping them of their identity. He doesn't call them the Israelites, this mighty nation, or God's people. He calls them servants or slaves of their king. And this person says, this Goliath is out there defying us Israelites. David's going to change that way of thinking. David spoke to the men who were standing with him. What will be done for the man who kills that Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Just who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Do you catch that? He says, Goliath isn't defying Israel. He's defying the living God. He looks at it so much differently. Who are you people, you soldiers who are hiding? Are you just normal soldiers? Or do you belong to the army of the living God? Who are you? Is that preaching to anyone? He says, look at this uncircumcised Philistine. When he says that, he's not just talking about anatomy. What he's saying is this Goliath, yes, he's decked out in physical security, but he's lacking spiritual security. He does not have a shield that is ultimately protecting him. Why are you sitting and hiding behind these lines? The troops told him about the offer, concluding, that is what will be done for the man who kills him. David's oldest brother, Eliab, listened as he spoke to the man, and he became angry with him. "Why did you come down here?" he asked. "Who did you leave those few sheep with in the wilderness? I know your arrogance and your evil heart. You came down to see the battle." "What have I done now?" protested David. "It was just a question." Then he turned from those beside him to others in front of him and asked about the offer. The people gave him the same answer as before. Now, Robin talked a little bit about this last week, but David was considered the unimportant one. These brothers that were there were the kingly material. David was the youngest and the least considered. But he's the one, apparently, that can really see what is going on. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, so he had David brought to him. David said to Saul, "Don't let anyone be discouraged by him. Your servant will go and fight this Philistine." I love this. David is the one having to give the pep talk. But Saul replied, "You can't go fight this Philistine. You're just a youth, and he's been a warrior since he was young." David answered Saul, "Your servant has been tending his father's sheep. Whenever a lion or a bear came and carried off a lamb from the flock, I went after it, struck it down, and rescued the lamb from its mouth. If it reared up against me, I would grab it by its fur, strike it down, and kill it. Your servant has killed lions and bears. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God." Then David said, "The Lord who rescued me from the paws of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." Saul knows Yahweh. He knows who he is, but he doesn't know him enough to trust him with his life. So he's hiding in his tent. Then Saul had his own military clothes put on David. He put a bronze helmet on David's head and had him put on armor. David strapped his sword on over the military clothes and tried to walk, but he was not used to them. "I can't walk in these," David said to Saul. "I'm not used to them." And literally he says, "I haven't tested these. I haven't been a part of these with God and myself. I don't need something new. I don't need your style of leadership and your level of fighting." So David took them off. He's shedding the failed leadership of Saul. Instead, he took a staff in his hand and chose 5 smooth stones from the wadi and put them in the pouch in his shepherd's bag. Then with the sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. The Philistine came closer and closer to David with the shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he despised him because he was just a youth, healthy and handsome. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come against me with sticks?" Then he cursed David by his gods. "Come here," the Philistine called to David, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts." Now, I want you to pay attention to what David's going to say, because he doesn't run out there and go, "Yeah, but I got a sling. I got something that you weren't counting on." He says, "David said to the Philistine, 'You come against me with the sword, spear, and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord of armies, the God of the ranks of Israel. You have defied him. Today the Lord will hand you over to me. Today I'll strike you down and remove your head and give the corpse to the Philistine camp, to the birds of the sky and the wild creatures of the earth. Then all the world will know that Israel has a God, and this whole assembly will know that it is not by sword or by spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's. He will hand you over to us." When the Philistine started forward to attack him, David ran quickly to the battle line to meet the Philistine. And we know how it ends. He struck him with his sling, not because he was amazing with the sling. Are you getting that? Not because Goliath wasn't ready for it. It's because the battle wasn't David's to begin with. The battle belonged to the Lord. And then he went and cut off Goliath's head with Goliath's own sword. Now, amazingly, we attribute so much to David coming in and bringing something unusual, something out of the box, but that's not at all how David sees what's happened. He came in with what he knew. He was a shepherd, so he knew a sling. That's what he carried into the battle. And here's what I think. If he had been a handyman and he'd walked in with a hammer and a ruler, he would have won the battle. If he had been the family janitor and showed up with a mop and a bucket, he would have won the battle. If he had been the family cook and showed up with a spoon and a ladle, he would have won the battle. It wasn't having the clever trick that won the battle. It was knowing who the battle belonged to in the first place. We don't need clever hacks to get through this. We need to know whose battle it belongs to in the first place. And I love that he just ran to the battlefield. How did he have the courage to do that? And I think the answer is math, which may dismay some of you. But let me tell you, the math is pretty easy. It's this, it's David plus God is greater than Goliath. Are you with me? David plus God is greater than the whole Philistine army. David plus God is greater than the obstacles that are out there. God wasn't looking for someone clever to come along. God was just looking for someone to come along and join in the battle. He was inviting people to be a part of this situation where someone is defying God. It wasn't about David and his problems. And I think this is where we get it wrong. In fact, David's life got more complicated because of this. David wasn't going into this because he's like, well, you know, on a shepherd's pay, I've overspent, and now I got this debt, and I don't know how to deal with it, but man, if I do this, I'm going to be able to get out of debt, right? He wasn't thinking of this as solving his personal problems. He wasn't like, oh, you know, a shepherd is a dead-end job, and this is going to get me out of that. And I've been looking for, you know, I'm out in the field all week, and I'm really looking for a hybrid job where I get to stay in the house, right? I mean, he wasn't looking to solve his personal problems. His life got more difficult. And this doesn't mean that we don't care about your problems. We all have problems. We have really smart people here to help with them. We'll sit with you and pray with them. But in this situation, it's not about us inviting God into our lives, which we should always do. This story is about God inviting us to join the fight out into the world, and which is broken. And we need to be able to see past that, to be able to join the fight. Because we know if God is on our side, he's going to solve the problem. He's just looking for someone to show up. It doesn't matter what you bring, what you're used to, what skills you have. You don't have to have the most money. You don't have to have the best technology. We don't have to be the church with the most PhDs. We are the church of the living God, and he's inviting us to join the battle. Do you believe that? This is a broken world where people are desperately looking for hope. That is the battle. The temptation is to go and find another Goliath, but we are not fighting against flesh and blood. One of the things we are fighting against is division. A world in which people are hungry for meaning, where people are lonely, where people are wondering if there's anybody that cares. That's the battle that we are fighting, and that's who we are. We are the messengers of light and life and hope. Are you ready to join in that battle? And here's the amazing news is that we already have a champion. And the great news is he was a shepherd as well. Let's look at John 10:11. I am the good shepherd. Jesus speaking, the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Jesus is not the shepherd that hid in his tent when the battle came. Jesus fought for the people he loved unto his death so that they could be free from sin, from these powers of greed and selfishness that constrain us and just bring death and hurt to us and to the people around us. He defeated that, and he's asking us to join in that battle. And yes, it's going to be messy. I mean, it's a broken world, and you guys are messy. And it's going to get messier. It won't be easy. This is a story I think we as a church need to hear, and that the world needs to hear, that is tired. It's been looking too long for a shortcut when the real answer is right there. And it's not easy, and it's often difficult, but all we got to do is follow our champion into the battle against a world that is broken and is only bringing death and destruction. And I am excited because we have a God that is bigger than anything we can bring. We're going to say a prayer, and if you want to join in that battle, church, can I ask you to just stand as I close us in prayer? Let's do that now. Heavenly Father, you are the Lord of hosts, the God above all others, and we confess we have spent so much of our strength looking for something smaller. We have hunted for the right technique, the right tool, the better angle, the clever hack, when all along the real advantage was simply you. Forgive us for the times we have been like Saul, knowing the right words, even saying them while hiding in the tents because we lack the courage to trust our lives to what we claimed to believe. And forgive us for letting the giants of this world tell us who we are, that we are alone, that nothing can change, that we are only what we own or what others think of us. Remind us, dear Lord, who we are. We are not servants of fear. We belong to you, and you yourself are our shield bearer. You know every one of us by name. Dear Lord, give us the courage not to slay our own giants, but to follow you onto the real battlefield against the despair, the division, the cynicism that keeps telling a tired world of its life doesn't matter. Don't let us merely invite you in. Let us join you there. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the true champion, Jesus, who needed no shortcuts because he was life, who disarmed the powers, defeated death, and still amazingly knows our name. It's in his name we pray, and the church said, amen. Amen.